Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The 367th edition of the Four Corners Podcast starts right now.
This is the Four Corners Podcast.
I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I've said that. To be in Chapel Hill, to be at the University of North Carolina.
We win! 54-53! North Carolina did it! North Carolina wins the championship!
With 20 seconds left to play, goes back to Michael Jordan. Jumper from out on the left. Good! Right way to Worthy! Worthy 5! The Tar Heels are going to win the national championship!
Weber, front court, Carolina with foul. He takes the timeout. Technical foul on Michigan. They're out of timeout.
Front court, Williams on the drive. Gets it back out to him. Long outside shot. Short rebounded. May, it's over. Carolina has won the national championship. 89-72, and how about them Tar Heels? They are the national champions.
I've been the luckiest coach in the world.
Pump fake for three. Too strong on the shot. That's it. The Tar Heels are the national daggum champions.
Carolina has been tested and tried and been proven successful through all the years. And the way that we will play will be the Carolina way.
My love for North Carolina, I mean, I love this school, I love these fans, and I love everything about it, and I would die for this school, I really would.
Here are your hosts, Josh Marlowe and Anthony Pagnotta.
Hello and welcome inside another live edition of the Four Corners Podcast, coming to you on a Tuesday night. A reminder, as always, we're powered by Carolina Electrical Services. Josh and Anthony back with you guys, here to go through the West region where Carolina is the number one seed for this year's NCAA tournament. We had to wait until tonight to go through the bracket because we had to wait for the bracket to officially be set, and it is now with Wagner getting by Howard in the first four, and they now earn the right to play Carolina Thursday afternoon in Charlotte. That game will tip off approximately at 2:45 on CBS. And now with the bracket officially set, we're here to go through it and talk about, you know, what it means for Carolina and just some other fun things about the bracket and the region, because this has been deemed the region of chaos, and a lot of people have a lot of different thoughts about how this region is ultimately going to unfold. And so it'll be a lot of fun as we make our way through it here talking tonight. But we'll start every edition of the pod, as we always do, with the pod thought of the day. And today's thought comes from the GOAT, Michael Jordan, and it goes as follows. Success doesn't stop when you get there. Man, that couldn't be a more appropriate pod thought for where we are right now, because Carolina's done a lot of good things, and they've done a lot of things to be proud of, winning an ACC regular season title. They played in the ACC tournament final in Washington, D.C., and as good and as fun as those achievements are, a regular season sweep of Duke, a regular season sweep of NC State. This month in this tournament ultimately is what defines success. And if Carolina plays deep, then we'll be able to look back at this and say, no doubt about it, this was a successful season. If Carolina doesn't play deep into the tournament, it's going to complicate how we feel about this team, and it'll complicate the legacies of certain guys whose careers are coming to an end or come to an end or could be coming to an end if RJ Davis opts not to return for a super senior season. And so, you know, buddy, I always try to find a pod thought that directly applies to where we're at with the team in the season. And I thought this one from Michael Jordan was very applicable, considering we're on the precipice and the beginning of the NCAA tournament for the Tar Heels.
Yeah, I mean, look, you've always been someone that sort of nailed that. And this one is perfect because, you know, I think that to a certain extent, you saw a team that felt like they were in a good spot going into the ACC tournament final. They felt like they were probably going to get that final one seed. And I mean, I'm not saying that it wasn't important to Carolina, but I do, you know, you always wonder, especially when you get late in those games, when things don't seem to be going your way, and especially with some of the things that were happening for NC State, if, you know, that they were just saying, look, you know, we're a team that knows we're going to be a number one seed, and, you know, we're okay with losing the conference tournament. Well, that's fine. That's fine. Now that you've come to terms with that, I mean, look, it's been a successful season. There's no doubt about it. I think, you know, we'll have to call it that just about no matter what. I mean, unless they exit in the first weekend of the tournament, I think just about everybody will say this was a successful season for Carolina, where you look at where they came in to where they are now. But at the same time, I mean, for this team, I mean, we talked about it. You actually talked about it on the main airwaves yesterday during your show. There's still a good amount of pressure on Carolina because you're a one seed. People are saying that this is the easiest region. So the expectation is that you should at least get to the Elite Eight and then set up the matchup that many expect with Caleb Love and Arizona. And so I do think that there is some pressure on Carolina to find a way through this West region and, you know, potentially get back to the Final Four. I think, you know, for them, they just have to realize that, yeah, successful season, but you got to keep that motivation because this is a team that has a chance to do something special.
Yeah, look, it doesn't matter the seed line, the situation, the circumstance. There's always pressure on Carolina basketball to perform and to perform at a high level in this event. You know, the standard, the floor is the Sweet 16 because Coach Smith lived in the Sweet 16. Roy Williams, for the most part, lived in the second weekend of the tournament. And, you know, when you've made the Final Four as an 8 seed under Hubert Davis, people are going to expect you to make the Final Four as a 1 seed. And so, you know, that journey, as I mentioned, starts on Thursday against Wagner. And that, again, that game is set to tip off roughly around 2:45 on CBS. So when you look at the bracket as a whole, and you look at Carolina's region as a one seed, I've listened to a lot of national college media people talk about it. I watched the 2-hour show that ESPN did on Sunday night. I watched a 3-hour show that CBS Sports Network did Sunday night. I referenced the Ion College Basketball podcast that does a tremendous job covering the sport, done by Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander. And the biggest takeaway I've taken from every single one of those platforms is they all believe that Carolina is the number one seed, most likely to get upset early in the tournament and to not make the Final Four. Between those three networks, only Jay Williams of ESPN has Carolina in Phoenix and has Carolina playing for the national championship and getting to the Final Four. And so when you take that in and you hear that, and these are people that, like, yes, we know our team very, very well. We know the sport very, very well. Unfortunately, we don't get paid to cover college basketball as an entity directly like these guys do. No. Is it concerning that there is this wide agreement from the national media that Carolina is the one seed most likely to go home early in this year's tournament?
No, I don't really care what those people think. I mean, everybody is believing in teams that, I mean, honestly, what have they done in the past to prove that they are worth believing in? The thing about Arizona making the Final Four is real rich to me because Tommy Lloyd is, you know, he got beat in the first round last year. He's a great coach, but he's not the only coach that hasn't been able to get over the hump at Arizona. So, I mean, this is a thing for them that they have to navigate. Hubert Davis has been to a Final Four. He went there in his first year, and he beat Coach K to make the national title game, had the a halftime lead that would end up being the biggest one blown in NCAA history, but still was, you know, out ahead of one of the best teams that we've seen in the last stretch of years here in that 2022 Kansas team. So, I mean, I don't know. I feel like you can still trust that Carolina is going to be able to make a run. And my thing is that we've also heard, and we'll talk about it here in a second, but I've heard that this is the weakest region. So it's the weakest region. Carolina got the easiest draw. Some people say it's almost unfair how easy the draw is that Carolina gets. But they're the team that's going to get upset. How does that make any sense? Now, look, I've seen, and maybe this is just in the last day or so, I've seen a lot more people that are starting to believe that Houston will get beat by Texas A&M. I think that's wild. I don't think Texas A&M is going to make it past their first round matchup, and I don't understand why people are looking at them as some great team. They're one of the worst shooting teams in this entire tournament in every single aspect: overall field goal percentage, 2-point percentage, and 3-point percentage. But there are people that are starting to look at that matchup and think that they could get upset there. There's also a lot of people that believe that they could get upset in the next round when they believe that they're going to take on Duke, because apparently Duke is this sexy pick to make it as a 4 seed. Apparently everything that they did in the regular season, the way that they struggled late in the year, everybody just wants to casually forget that. So, I don't know. To me, I mean, I don't know what – are you seeing a lot of people that have Mississippi State beating Carolina? Because I don't see a ton of people that are predicting that one. To me, the Sweet 16, I don't know anybody that's picking Carolina to get beat in the Sweet 16. Like, who are you picking to beat Carolina? Alabama, a team that literally can't stop anything? Or St. Mary's, a team that is, one of the more offensively challenged groups in this tournament. Great defensive team, but if they get up against a team that has legitimate scorers, especially on the perimeter, they're a team that could struggle. So, I'm not really that concerned about that. To me, I would be stunned if Carolina does not make it to at least the Elite Eight this year. And to me, I think that's something that you should feel confident in, because with teams like Houston, Purdue, I don't think it's guaranteed that they make it there.
I think the reason why this belief exists is if you watch Houston, you watch Purdue, like UConn's in a different stratosphere because they're the best team in the country.
Yeah, they're a guaranteed Final Four team. I would be absolutely stunned if they don't make it out of their region.
Like, I watched Houston, I watched Purdue when they played B-minus, C-plus games in conference play. I think when you look at Carolina, they have to play to such a standard with this particular group to go deep. And it's a hard thing to expect when it's a one-and-done event. Like, if they lose, they don't get a chance to come back. I think that's where this belief exists from, because Carolina is one of the hardest-playing teams in the country from a Power 5 perspective. Like, because, and we've talked about it all year long, this isn't your prototypical North Carolina team that's a one seed. Like, the one seeds that I grew up watching were one seeds that could score 90 on you at any given night and run you out of the gym. That's not this Carolina team. This is a Carolina team that can score 90 when their defense plays at an elite level and is fueling their offense. And so I'm not saying that I agree with that notion. I just think that's where it comes from. I mean, I heard Jay Billis. He was doing a series of making the case for every team. And his case is that if Carolina plays with the level of effort that we saw them play for the majority of the season, then yes, they're a Final Four team. But if you see the effort that you saw the other night against NC State in the final, they're not a Final Four team. And I think Carolina, as much as any one seed in the bracket, like matchups are the most important thing this time of the year. Carolina made the Final Four 2 years ago because they matched up really, really well with how that bracket fell, with a one seed in Baylor, a four seed in UCLA, and then, of course, a 15 seed in St. Peter's. I do think that Carolina, from a matchup perspective, is at a disadvantage from the three other number one seeds, UConn, Purdue, and Houston.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think Purdue can be exposed. I mean, if you can find a way, they did it last year. I mean, you had a mid-major team that had to play in a play-in that found a way to beat them. So, like, I mean, spare me that one. Like, I don't understand the ass-kissing of Purdue. Like, I really don't. I don't understand how their margin for error is seen as they're a team that, well, if they don't play their best, then they can beat Utah State. Utah State won the Mountain West Conference regular season title. You're telling me that team couldn't walk in there and beat them if they don't play their best? I mean, you look at some of the other matchups. I mean, Gonzaga, I mean, they're playing their best basketball right now. I wouldn't be shocked if they were able to find a way to beat them. And, I mean, dude, you talk about matchups. I mean, I know it's probably a long shot after the news that we got today, but if Hunter Dickinson is healthy enough, I mean, Kansas, I mean, he matches up as well as any big in the country against Edie. So, I don't know. That's wild to me that Carolina is seen as the team that needs the gifts in order to be able to get to the Final Four, where Purdue is a team that, oh, that, you know, they're just so powerful. Like, dude, come on, man. We've seen it so many times that they fall short against teams that they should have a huge advantage against. So, I mean, matchups, yeah, they're going to matter for Carolina. There's one that you would prefer. But, like, look, I'm not a guy that's shaking in my boots over the fact. Like, look, Mississippi State, I would not want to see Mississippi State if I had a choice. But I don't think you should be terrified of playing them. You know, Alabama, I mean, look, they've got guards that can score the ball, and that's something that could cause Carolina problems. But they also they don't know what the word defense is. They're the worst defensive team in the entire tournament. So, I mean, and then you look at Baylor and Arizona, like, what are you supposed to be, like, terrified? Arizona is not playing their best basketball. They've been beaten by some horrendous teams in the Pac-12. And Baylor, I mean, dude, they've been stopping and starting all year. When you think that they're ready to settle into a groove and start playing their best basketball, you know, they start to struggle. And they're also a pretty young team. They got a lot of youth. Their best player is a freshman, hell of a player. But when it comes to, you know, Carolina matching up with them, I'm going to trust the veteran guys over that. So, I don't know, man. I don't think Carolina needs any gifts. I think – and that mindset is great. If people think that, that's awesome, because that's just going to serve as motivation for this group.
Well, I think that's a fair point. Again, I don't agree with that assessment. I have Carolina in the Final Four in a bracket that I think is going to go in a region that's going to be a lot of chalk. But that's the sense I get from the content that I've absorbed in preparing to talk about the tournament, both here, you know, on the podcast, and of course with what we do at the station. The other part about Carolina's region is, I mean, it's been deemed the region that the most chaos could ensue. There are other areas and other brackets where I do think chaos is possible. I'll tell you that the reason why, but when you guys see my bracket, you're going to see a lot of one. You're going to see all four number ones in the Final Four for just the second time ever. And you're going to see a lot of ones facing twos and a lot of ones facing threes in the Elite Eight. I think this, with being the worst seeded bracket I've ever seen, I don't think it allows for chaos to be on the table. But you look at the West, and it's definitely there, because I do think Carolina has as tough an 8-9 matchup as any one seed. And then you look at the 5-12 and the 4-13. If the lower seeds pull off the upsets, and they're more than capable of doing so, there's a very good chance they find their way to the second weekend. We know Arizona's history and track record under Tommy Lloyd, despite being the first coach ever to be a 1 or 2 seed in his first 3 seasons as a head coach, that's yet to result in a deep tournament run. Baylor is looking to get back to the level of performing that we saw when they were winning the national championship. And the year before, if the COVID season wouldn't have canceled the tournament, that team very likely would have wound up in the Final Four. So when you're looking at the bracket and it's being deemed the bracket in the region with chaos, why do you think that assessment has emerged of all four of the regions that make up this year's bracket?
Well, I mean, you laid it out. I mean, the 2 seed, you just haven't seen them make a deep run. And last year, last year that team lost in the first round. They got beat by a 15 seed in Princeton. Baylor is a team that, you know, since they made the title run, and it's only been in a couple of years, but they haven't been the same. They haven't looked great. And again, this year, you know, when they've had chances to really take over and try to show that they can hang with the top 2 teams in the Big 12, they haven't really been able to do that. Bama, just a horrendous defensive team. And that's the reason why nobody's really talking about them. And St. Mary's, I mean, yeah, I get it. They have really rallied and put together a strong season. But I think with them, the problem is there's not enough offensive firepower there. So that's the reason why you see a lot of people look at this and think there could be chaos. Also, the lower seeds in this part of the bracket are really good. So while some of the higher seeds may seem like they're vulnerable, you look at some of these lower seeds and just say, yeah, I mean, you may have the best 12 seed in the entire bracket in Grand Canyon in this region. You may have the best 13 seed in Charleston in this region. You may have the best 11 seed. I think it is the best 11 seed in New Mexico in this region. I mean, hell, they're actually favored. If you're a betting person, they're favored by 1.5 to beat the 6 seed Clemson. That's how much trust there is in them and how little there is in Clemson. And I mean, even when you go, you know, further down, I mean, Colgate, experienced team, 3 times in 4 years, they've made the tournament. That's who Baylor has to play to start out. So there is a lot of teams here that are double digit seeds, even Nevada, who, you know, 26-7 this year, that a lot of people feel like have a chance to make some noise if they can get by certain matchups. So that's the reason why. I mean, look, that's one that I have as a chaotic region, but I have 2 of them. It could be the West region, but I could easily see it being where some of these teams slip through and you could end up with 1, 2, 3, and 4 advancing if enough things break right. I also think the South region is probably one that could potentially produce chaos as well. So here's the thing. Even if this was to produce chaos, the fact that people look at that and say, I mean, what do you think is going to happen? When Carolina gets to the Final Four, they're not going to be prepared and ready to go. Like, guys, they'll be perfectly fine no matter who they have to play when they get to the Final Four, especially if it is Connecticut who is the team that's going to be opposite of them, because that's right, they've already played UConn this year, so they'll know what to expect going in. But yeah, I definitely think this is one of those regions that's primed for a little bit of chaos.
Well, and like, here's the thing, if the bracket open, you know, no matter what happens, this is why you play the non-conference schedule that you play. And it's, you know, look, the ACC got more teams in the dance than the Big East did. So while the Joe Lenardis of the world try to devalue the league, the selection committee respects what the ACC did as a conference this year. And I mean, Carolina was 17-3 in the ACC, 19-4 if you count what they did in the ACC tournament. On the flip side, if we do have chaos, like, all that does is just open up the door for Carolina, right, to get back to the Final Four. They took advantage of it 2 years ago.
Yep.
You know, when they made the Final Four as the 8 seed, because you had to play a 15 to go to the Final Four. For the first time ever, you saw a 15 in the Elite Eight. You had to see the four that year in the Sweet 16, but you know, Carolina was able to dispatch them. So, you know, you're one that looks at the bottom of the bracket. You know, a believer in New Mexico. I mean, I have New Mexico winning their first round game as well. I have them beating Clemson, but I think if you're a Carolina fan, you know, you're rooting for chaos, because if chaos ensues and you're not a part of it and you get to the second weekend, all it does is make that pathway easier and much more believable for Carolina to get to a record 22nd Final Four.
Yeah, and look, I mean, yeah, you want to – I mean, it would be – basically, here's how you look at it. You would take chaos, but I got to be honest, you shouldn't fear any of these teams in this part of the bracket. Like, trust me, I get it if you don't want to have the storyline of having to play Arizona, because I don't either. I don't want to have to play Caleb Love, and I mean, regardless of what ends up happening, it's going to change the legacy that Caleb Love has in Chapel Hill. I would prefer not have to play him, and we still remember him in Chapel Hill for the run that he had and led us on during the 2022 tournament. So that's the one that you might want to avoid, but it's not because you don't think that Carolina can beat them. I think, you know, everybody else, yeah, they're beatable. But, yeah, I have chaos. I think Sweet 16, Carolina will face Grand Canyon, and I think in the Elite Eight they face New Mexico. Because I just, to me, I don't trust some of these other teams in this part of the bracket. And yeah, if that happens, I'm not apologizing to anybody, because getting to the Final Four regardless is going to be difficult. Here's the thing is people will say, well, you know, Carolina had an easy path to get there. I'd encourage you to go back and watch last year's tournament and see the teams that made the Final Four. People probably thought that the teams that they upset had easy paths when they pulled the upsets in the previous round. And guess what happened? They got beat by those teams. So, I mean, look, at this point, we've seen it. We know how chaotic college basketball has gotten. Hell, we witnessed it this past weekend in the ACC tournament. So you got to be prepared for every single game. And, yeah, if it ends up being these double-digit seeds, first of all, as you said, it's no guarantee. Like, what is seeding really even mean? There are some teams that are hideously underseeded in this bracket. There are some teams that are horrendously overseeded. And so, I mean, I think Carolina, you just have to play who's in front of you. And if it ends up opening up for you, and who cares? If they win every game by 20, I don't give a damn. We're going back to the Final Four, and everybody can kiss me where I split. That's how I look at it.
Okay. Remember, this is a G-rated program. When you look at this region in its totality, and now we'll kind of shift away from the Carolina side of it, but it still impacts Carolina because, of course, they can see any one of these teams as the tournament moves along. What to you is the best first-round matchup in the West?
The best first-round matchup is probably St. Mary's and Grand Canyon. I think it's between them and New Mexico, but I think the contrast in styles, I think Grand Canyon is a very, very attractive team for people that are looking for that 5-12 upset. They got a fantastic player in guard, Teyon Grant Foster, who's an NBA prospect. He's got some help in the backcourt with Rayshon Harrison, who scores almost 14 a game as well. I mean, don't get it wrong. You know, Grant Foster is their best player. They still have three guys that score 13 or more per game. They average 79 points per game. Also a pretty solid defensive team. So they're well-balanced, and I think they match up pretty well with St. Mary's. But St. Mary's, a good guard duo in their backcourt as well with Aiden Mahaney and Augustus Marciliones, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. And they allow the second fewest points in the country. So I really think that could be a very interesting matchup. And then when you go to Clemson and New Mexico, I mean, look, Clemson, we just have no idea what – who is that team, honestly? Are they the team that beat Carolina in Chapel Hill earlier this year where P.J. Hall looks like he could be, you know, one of, if not, you know, the best big men, you know, in the country? If he does, I believe he still has a year remaining. So, yeah, that – I mean, he's shown you at times that he's capable of being that type of player, stretches the floor very well. And, you know, Joe Girard is a guy that has at times gotten hot from the outside. But they're a team that, you know, at times has been suspect defensively, especially guarding the three. And going up against a New Mexico team with, you know, some guys like Jalen House, who is having a tremendous season, and then two big guys on the inside that can really affect the way that you play in Donovan Dent and JT Toppin. I think that matchup, you're seeing those two guys potentially go up against P.J. Hall and Ian Sheflin. I mean, that's the thing. How many guys have two legitimate bigs that can match them? I think this is a team in New Mexico that does. That's why I think New Mexico is so dangerous as well. So those are the two that I'm keeping an eye on.
Yeah, look, I think if you like offense, Alabama Charleston is one to keep an eye on. That game could feature the loser legitimately scoring in the high 80s, maybe even the low 90s. Bama's the best offensive team in the country, but they play defense the way that NBA teams play defense, which means they don't. The same thing goes for Baylor and Colgate. You know, Matt Langle's team is one of the better high tempo teams in the country. They like to get out and run. We've seen them in the tournament run with the big dogs. It was a few years ago. They played Arkansas in the first round, and they were right there in the second half before the Razorbacks were able to just wear them down and pull away from them. And look, we know Baylor, a very guard-driven team. They play with a lot of pace. They shoot a lot of threes. From an offensive standpoint, those two games are one to keep an eye on. But to me, the best matchup is St. Mary's and Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. I think whoever wins that matchup, I think, makes the Sweet 16. I don't think if Bama gets by Charleston, they can win two tournament games playing the type of defense that they play. And I don't think as great as a coach as Nate Oates is and the talent that they have and the experience that they have, I don't think you can turn it on this time of the year defensively. At this point, they're a bad defensive team. I expect that to end their season sooner rather than later. When you look at St. Mary's and Grand Canyon, it's all about styles, baby. Whichever team dictates the way the game's going to be played is going to win the game. St. Mary's wants to slow the game down. They want to grind you out. They want to run the clock. They give up the second fewest points of any team in the country. And on the flip side, man, Grand Canyon plays fast. They press. They trap. They want to get the game free-flowing, and they want to make it an open-floor game. And so I think that's going to be, from a stylistic approach, the best game for basketball fans to watch, because it's really going to be a chess match. And whichever team wins the X's and O's, I do think will actually end up winning that basketball game. So the last thing we'll talk about before we take a break and get some closing notes and get out of here for this edition of the podcast, because we'll be back tomorrow night previewing the Wagner game in depth, is the sleepers. And I'm trying to identify the team that nobody's talking about, or maybe the team that is getting some love but not as much love. Which team do you look at this bracket and say is the biggest sleeper and is the biggest threat to make a deep run this March?
Well, I mean, look, I kind of gave it away a little bit earlier that I have Grand Canyon and New Mexico making deeper runs. So, of course, both of those teams I think are more than capable. But I'll tell you another team here that could cause some chaos as well, or teams, to be honest with you. Whoever wins that 7-10 matchup between Dayton and Nevada, also really good game if you're looking for another good one in this bracket, they could definitely be dangerous. I mean, two teams that like to score the ball. Now, it's in different fashions. I mean, Dayton, they've got Dayron Holmes, one of the best big men that nobody talks about in the country, averages over 20 a game. a little over 8 rebounds per game, shoots 54% overall, but also can stretch the floor. So he's a really interesting player going up against the Nevada team, where if they were to make a deep run, it's because they've got two guards that can really score it. Jerrod Lucas, who's right at about 18 a game, and then Keenan Blackshear, who's just over 15 a game. So I think both of those teams could potentially be dangerous, and that's a, you know, a game where whoever wins that one, I wouldn't be shocked if Carolina had a chance to see them in the Elite Eight either. That's why I think some of the double-digit seeds, like I said, I really believe New Mexico is the best 11 seed, in my opinion, in the bracket. Grand Canyon's the best 12 seed, and I think you can make an argument that Nevada might be the best 10 seed. So that's the reason why there's so many different sleepers to keep an eye on in this part of the bracket, and why a lot of people think there can be chaos.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll just piggyback off of one of your teams, and I've got them winning their first-round matchup. I do think New Mexico is the team to watch in the bottom portion of the West region. Mm-hmm. To me, it was laughable when we got told on Sunday that had they not won their conference tournament, they wouldn't have made the NCAA tournament. That was a NCAA tournament team. That was a team that was should not have had to have won its conference tournament than to have an automatic bid into the field of 68. And so Richard Pitino has done a fantastic job. He has made a program that's got a little bit of history and a track record of success. He's restored them. They play a fun brand of basketball. I mean, and he's a Pitino. You get Burke for the ability to coach basketball and do it at a really high level. And so I think they'll beat Clemson. And I would not be surprised. Like, I think they can play with Baylor. And I think they could beat Baylor. And I think if they did that, you couldn't tell me that they couldn't beat in Arizona and find themselves playing in a regional final with a spot in the Final Four on the line. And so that's the team at the bottom that I look at. The team at the top, I hear Grand Canyon, but I've seen St. Mary's more, obviously, because St. Mary's is on TV with where that program has gotten to under Randy Bennett. Aiden Mahaney is one of my favorite guards in the country. And just the way that they play, like kind of like how Virginia was at the height of their run under Tony Bennett.
Yeah, not currently, because they are getting almost doubled up at halftime here, and they've scored 14 points.
Like back in those days when they had NBA dudes, Virginia was getting to the second weekend of the tournament just about every year because it's just a hard style to play against. And so I do think St. Mary's, I have them in my Sweet 16. That's why I have Carolina beating to get to the final on their way to the Final Four. But that's the team at the top that I look at and say could be primed for some success in this year's NCAA tournament. So that's our look at the West region, talking, of course, all things Carolina, but some other things around Carolina. As I mentioned, we'll be back tomorrow night. We'll preview the first round matchup fully in depth against Wagner. But before we get out of this edition, we do have some closing notes, but we got to take a break for one of our partners.
Hey there, Josh here for the Autograph Fandom app. Want to get rewarded for listening to our show? The team at Autograph, co-founded by Tom Brady, is redefining the fan experience by letting users earn points for the acts of fandom they take every day, like listening to this show. The Autograph Fandom app gives you access to your favorite UNC content in one place and offers rewards like tickets, exclusive merchandise, and much more. You're already listening to our show, but now you can earn points and get rewarded for it. Head over to the Apple App Store and search for Autograph Fandom Rewarded and download it today for free using the referral code HEALTOUGH. Link and code are also in our podcast description.
Make sure you get over to the Apple App Store, guys. Download the Autograph Fandom Reward app. Use that promo code and help us help you get rewarded for being a fan of us and, more importantly, being a fan of Carolina basketball and Carolina athletics. Two closing notes before we get out of this edition of the pod. Tomorrow, Carolina will have open practice. So if you're in the area and you want to go see the Heels practice ahead of their first round matchup, you can do so. It'll be from 12:30, I think, to like 1:15. And that'll be available to you at the Spectrum Center, of course, the site of Carolina's first round matchup on Thursday afternoon. And the last closing note is just more accolades for RJ Davis. Was named an AP First Team All-American earlier today. And this is just another award and what's going to be a pretty hefty award season for Carolina's senior guard who, and we'll probably go back and do this at the end of the year. When you look at his season individually from top to bottom, it's one of the best guard seasons we've ever seen in Carolina basketball. It's really cool seeing him get the recognition he deserves. After, remember, we left ACC tip-off without him being anywhere on the ACC's and preseason player of the year ballot or on any of the ACC first or second team ballots. And all this guy has done is been a first-team All-ACC member, the ACC player of the year, and has now, you know, earned his second national award for his individual season, one that has catapulted Carolina to a one seed in the NCAA tournament. Well, with that, guys, that is going to wrap up this edition of the show. In the meantime, we do encourage you to visit the website heeltoughblog.com, where, believe it or not, as we're getting ready for the tournament, we're also covering the transfer portal. There's an article up about two transfers that entered the portal earlier today, and I wrote about if Carolina should be interested in them. So go and check out that article. Got some pretty negative feedback on a lot of Carolina fans not wanting to hear the transfer portal talk before we play a tournament game, but that's just the state of college hoops. Of course, we'll be getting you ready with the full breakdown of Wagner. Anthony's going to post about the West region as well. So we'll have you covered for Carolina's first-round matchup, but we got some homework for you on the West region as well. And by the way, spring practice officially underway in Chapel Hill for Mack Brown and Carolina football. We'll be keeping you up to date on that front as well. Just to make it easy on you guys, get in the routine every single day. Visit HeelToughBlog.com for the latest Carolina basketball, Tar Heel football coverage. As for the podcast, you guys know where to find us. And if you don't, just search the Four Corners Podcast on every major podcasting platform. We're there. We will pop up. We do encourage you guys to rate, leave us a review, but most importantly, hit that subscribe button. We just finished a stretch recording 8 pods in 4 days. We got another crazy stretch coming up with Carolina starting NCAA tournament play this week. So make sure you hit that subscribe button. That way you don't miss any editions of the show throughout the remainder of the basketball season. But with that, guys, it is going to wrap up this edition of the show. I do want to thank Anthony once again for hosting with me. We want to thank you guys for watching and listening. And as always, go Tar Heels!
Guys, it just doesn't get any sweeter than that!